Alrighty. QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty, hearing none there. We are coming up on the end of July. And this Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Big Bear Lake Fire Station in Big Bear Lake, California. We will be doing ham testing, as we always do at the end of the month. If you know anybody who's ready to upgrade or anybody who's ready to take the plunge and get into ham radio, that'll be 1 o'clock again at the Big Bear Big Bear Lake Fire Station. And we'll have a lot of our Big Bear Amateur Radio Club members there. Anyway, come on down and we'll get you all signed up and hopefully you can pass your test there. It'll be great. Alrighty, any other announcements out there? One more time. Alright, let's get going with the roster. WB6CLZ, Mike, Mobile out there.
WB6CLZ, Mobile in Fountain Valley. Good evening to Tom and everyone on the net.
Alrighty, and I think you have WB6CIN next to you there.
WB6CIN here in Fountain Valley.
Alright, how about KA6CIA George?
Hello, Tom, KA6CIA.
Alright, George, glad to have you out there. It's good to have you with us this evening. We'll be ending up talking about some grounding. You are a very good specialist on that. How about KE6RJ? Harry, are you in ear's reach? Okay, nothing heard. How about KE6QI, Nancy? And nothing heard. This is KF6Q with Tech Tuesday Net on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. How about AF6ZJ, Guy in Rosamond? And I can hear KI6FKN, are you out there, or are you still working?
I just got done a little bit ago, Tom. Good to hear you this evening. KI6FKN.
Okay, Chris, glad to have you out there. I know sometimes we don't hear you out there, I don't call you. I know you're busy this time of year, and by golly, if you fall asleep, that's quite okay. Not a problem. Good to see you yesterday. KJ6HZS, Mike.
Evening, Tom, and that is KJ6HCS, no traffic.
Hey, Mike, we're going to give K6EKX courtesy check-in out there. How about KJ6FIL, Mike?
Good evening, everybody. KJ6FIL. I think I'm out here somewhere.
Okay, Mike. Redwood's there. Boy, I tell you what, passed through there a little earlier, and it was definitely warming up. Oh, boy. Good luck to you out there. How about KF6VH, Bob? Yeah, nothing heard. KJ6KDL, Jim.
listening in.
All right there, Jim and Rosemary. Glad to have you out there listening in. How about W6GZI, Frank? And up at her, KI6IQA, Kelly.
Yes, yes. KI6IQA.
Hey, Roger that. With somebody underneath there, please come back. Okay, Roger that. Hey, good to have you out there, Kelly. How about K6GVL, Ron in Green Valley?
Good evening, Tom and Annette. This is Ron, K6GVL, Green Valley Lake.
Okay, Ron. Hey, notice the sign there on the turnoff says malt shop. I guess they must have a great malt shop there in town. Anyway, 86PL, Harold.
Evening, 86PL.
All right, Harold, glad to have you out there from Riverside. How about K6LCS, Clint from Harupa Valley? There we go. We give him a raise and see what happens. He won't show up for work. How about W6AWL, Art?
Hey, Tom, out here in the driveway. Just about got it ready to leave the mountain. Thanks for your help, and we'll be out here listening. W6AWM.
Okay, Art, good luck on your trip. Hope everything is safe for you on the way back, and way back east there, and hope you have a good time back there. W6JLM, Judith.
Good evening, Tom, and everyone on the net. This is W6JLM, and as a PS, Tom, Kenneth and I will not be at the testing on Sunday. We'll be down the hill. W6JLM.
Okay, Judith, appreciate that. Appreciate all the help you have done in the past. Greatly appreciated. How about W6KMM? Is he standing right there?
Good evening, Tom, and everyone on the net. This is W6KMM.
All right, Ken, take care. Appreciate you being out there. Don't know if he's out there. How about KI6OHN, John? He's probably listening in out there. Let's see, moving on down here. K6YNW, Chris.
Good evening to you in the net, K6YNW.
Okay, Chris, glad to have you out there. Appreciate you're out there almost every week, like clockwork there. Moving down here, KD6LAN, Bill. Not hearing him out there right now. Did want to say one little note here, a great appreciation to Bill and everybody else who handled a missing hiker a few days back there. Great use of the repeater, great use of ham radio. Kudos and thanks to you out there, and keep up the good work. All right, moving on down here, K6HAL, Rudy. Nothing heard there. Let's give old Adam a try. KJ6BCK, Adam in Garden Grove. And nothing heard. How about AE6CK, Victor?
Good evening, Tom and Ned. This is Victor Alpha, Echo 6, Charlie Kilo, Santa Fe Springs. Mic to you.
Hey, Victor. I know here in Santa Fe Springs you're at work. You're putting in the hours again. Glad to have you with us, though. How about KE6VHM? Frank, are you out there? And nothing heard. KA6ROD, Rod.
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
All right, Rod, glad to have you out there. Appreciate that. Hope the weather is the same as it is here, straight across there at Moon Ridge. Beautiful. KJ6DBS, Leon and Arrow Bear, are you out there? Nothing heard. KB6LTY, Christy.
KB6LTY.
All right, Christy, glad to have you out there. A little note, got this from Clint, that we are now listed on the AMSAT site as being part of a AMSAT net on a weekly basis right here. So we've made the big time. All righty, how about AE6TV, Hans? And nothing heard. How about NQ7RD, Rick and Corona? Nothing heard there. K6TUX, Ski, out there at 29 Palms. All right, that concludes the list as I have it. Is there anybody out there who'd like to check in as a guest? Please come back to KF6Q. Alrighty, nothing heard. Anybody can check in at any point in time. Open net, even though it is a directed net, please go through net control. Michael, WB6CLZ, what, if any, do we have for a DX report for this last week? Yeah, let's call out one more time, WB6CLZ, Mike, out there, are you listening from KF6Q?
Well, we went out to give her a hand, so we're back in back on frequency, WB6CLZ.
Okay, Mike, what do we have cooking out there, if anything, for a DX report?
Well, about status quo. We're about the same place we were last time, unfortunately. Not having any fun. I have the report here somewhere, but I can't find it now. So we're looking at about 23 sunspots. We're looking at an SFI in the mid-80s with really nothing going on. I've worked a couple of stations on 17 meters today, but nothing to brag about. So it's just wait and see. Hopefully someone else has had better luck than I have. Back over to net control.
Alrighty, KF6Q here on the Tech Tuesday Net. Every Tuesday, conditions permitting, 1900 hours on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Well, let's see, anybody else out there? Chris, I know you've been very busy, don't know if you have anything to report, but if you do, please come back, appreciate it.
Oh yeah, Tom, actually a few days ago I jumped on 20 meter band late in the evenings, or 9 o'clock and after, and I made a contact with a guy in Ukraine. A couple of people from Ukraine were on, and let's see, Alaska, Poland, don't believe I made contact with the Polish, two people from Poland were on there, and a guy in Sweden. So there was a little bit of activity in the evenings. That was a few days ago. That's the only time I had the radio on also, so that's about the best I can do. KI6SKN.
Chris, I appreciate that. And, you know, I know that your antenna is set up from north to south, which I guess would mean that your radiation pattern is probably the best from east to west. But it sounds like you're getting straight over the pole on, we'd call probably not the prime null of that. So it's always amazing. I know your antenna works so good out there for you, you know, and I think you've pretty much contacted people just about in every direction. So who says that thing is directional anyway, right? Okay, anybody else out there with any DX to report or comment on, please come back to KF6Q. Alrighty, I have been busier than a one-arm paper hanger. Nothing against one-arm paper hangers. They are very busy people. but anyway, so one of these days I'll be able to help out with that part too. Anyway, don't know if he's back out there yet. Don't know if K6LCS, Clint, if you're out there, please come back for the amateur satellite report. All right, nothing here or there. Maybe he'll join us a little bit later. And, one more time, I'm not sure how that got on there. However, we are listed as on the AMSAT site as actually having a dependable, I guess we're here almost every Tuesday, net at 1900 hours at 147.330 for Southern California. So we're on the AMSAT list. That's good. Anyway, topic for the evening, we're going to try to wrap up, if possible, our little discussion about lightning, and I'm going to review a little bit here for if there's anybody has not been listening over the last couple of weeks. Michael, I know you don't have your paperwork with you. One more time here as we go through this and kind of help me out a little bit with some of this information. A couple things we want to know about thunderstorms, and we're going to go quickly on what we've already talked about. Evidently, the danger zone is actually 10 miles in front of the storm. Is that correct?
Is correct, up to 10 miles in front of the storm. So, my advice, when you see those little wispy clouds forming, if they start getting pretty dark and you can see them, disconnect.
Yeah, the anvil shape, cumulonimbus or something like that. But anyway, I have to be careful about those. And they travel about 25 miles an hour, so that'll give you an idea if it's moving in your direction and how soon it'll even be right on top of you. A little bit about lightning strikes. First off, Mike, we have a 50,000 degree Fahrenheit in about a microsecond, and I think we also had something, what's the typical strike, about 50 billion volts, is that correct? I couldn't actually find it in here, but I think you looked that up. I think it was 50 billion, not million, but billion. Does that sound about right?
I have my paperwork, I'm not sure. I kind of remember 1 billion, but, you know, when you're up in that range, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can have a microamp at a billion volts, and you're dead meat. And so is your equipment, and maybe your house.
And your neighbor's house. Roger that. Well, 1 billion, 50 billion, yeah, you're right. Kind of like the national debt. Who cares? A little bit more doesn't matter, right? For the first 10 yards, because of that high heat wave, the shock wave itself is faster than the speed of sound. It is basically ultrasonic, which is unusual. Didn't know anything actually in nature broke the sound barrier, but there you go. That's one right there. Of course, after that, we hear the thunder, and boy, is it loud if you're close. Anyway, a little bit about that radiation. Let me reset. Due to the pulses, and I say pulses, basically lightning would be in the 1 megahertz all the way down to 20 kilohertz. If you were going to put a frequency on it, what does that mean? Well, what that means is any antenna whatsoever is an incredible antenna for lightning, and it's going to pick up, it's got all, well, we'll just call it gain, the gain you don't want to have. And at that point, we'll say this, actually, we're going to go over this a little bit too. There's more than one pulse. The lightning strike is actually in about 3 to 4 pulses per strike. I don't know if we mentioned that last week. Kiloamps. I mean, thousands from 3 to 140 kiloamps. Just incredible amount of energy, all in that just a few microseconds of time. Michael, I would say that, I don't know what the watts are on that thing, but incredible. I'll bet you could probably cook an egg or more, right?
So you'd blow an egg into little pieces that you'd never find. Yeah, a lot of awesome power there. You know, you're talking thousands of amps. And the greater the capture area on your antenna, I guess what I'm saying is the more you got wire hanging out there, the more aluminum hanging out, the more susceptible it is also.
Roger that. So, there's a couple little statistics here. And, of course, the higher your tower, the more apt of it being hit is a factor of how many days and how many thunderstorm days we have. There are charts. There's an incredible map, And anybody interested in actually reading this entire article, it's republished with permission from QST, please send me an email at kf6q, kf6q@arrl.net, and I'll forward this on to you. It's a website that was allowed to republish this with permission, and you can actually look at this and possibly even download it yourself for reading. And neat charts and a whole lot of information that we really don't even have time for here on the net. So anyway, let me reset. As we start looking at this and our equipment, we've got two different things here we're trying to do. Is number one, get the if we're going to be hit by lightning, and I say that with reservation because even if lightning hits close by, there are extreme dangers there. It could hit your neighbor's house, and you're going to have effects because of that pulse. That big antenna you got out there is an excellent tuned circuit for the pulse that lightning brings, and it could be you could have a strike maybe even two blocks away. You're still going to get a huge electromagnetic pulse. So we have two things we're going to go over tonight. One is what to do with that possible residual pulse you're going to get from that. If you do have a direct strike, how to get rid of most of it, if not all of it, if possible, and all the safety precautions and grounding. Let me reset. Yeah, KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. I think the first thing we have to look at is what is in the ham shack. Mike, briefly, I know that you've got two different setups, one down the hill, down there in Placentia, and one up here. At either location, within the four-foot radius, and that's what they're telling us here, a four-foot radius, electronics-wise, how many pieces of equipment do you have, basically? You got your radio and your power supply. Do you have much more than that, or you've got just a basic station there?
You're talking radio, you're talking power supply, you're talking about controller for the Yagi antennas. Let's see, and that's about it, possibly a keyer. But they're talking about inputs and outputs. And Tom, I've got to get out of here for a quick second and help Cindy with this LED retrofit. So I will be back in maybe 2 minutes. So keep me in the loop, but we're going to get out of here for a few.
Okay, Mike, good luck, and just give me a holler when you're back. Essentially, if you have one of those rooms with 5 million pieces of equipment, this is when it's not a good thing. Basically, what you have to consider is every piece of equipment, and in twofold ways. First off, we know we're going to be cautious. We're going to do protection on the coax or feed line coming in. But we also have power lines. We can get a surge through the power line. We can get a surge through, if you have a cable connection for internet, you can get a surge through that. If you have a telephone line, you can get a surge through that. All these different things that you have coming in to your shack, each one of them can bring in lethal and destructive pulses. So we'll try to handle at least the main ones of the feed, the power line feed, and possibly your antenna. And every one of these actually needs to be addressed, so it'd be actually very good to look at that article. Let me reset. Real quick out there, I want to catch him before he falls asleep. Chris, KI6FKN, if you're out there, I know you've got a pretty good little ham bench set up there, and you're probably typical of a lot of us. You know, if you got an antenna and maybe one or two radios and a tuner, pretty much now is a good time for not being complicated. Anything else I missed out there that you might possibly have there?
I'm sorry, Tom. I just got off the phone with a customer. I only caught a little bit of what you were saying there. Can you come back with that question?
Oh, not a problem, Chris. Not a problem. As far as pieces of equipment, we're looking at addressing, you know, every piece of equipment within a four-foot radius of the danger zone here. And I know myself, I have a power supply, I have a radio, probably got a computer around here somewhere next to it. I don't know if they're hooked up or not, but it probably doesn't matter. How many pieces of equipment? I think you're probably like a typical station there. You got a tuner, and you got basically a radio or two, and power supply. Did I miss anything there? That's pretty much like an average, basic, good station there, right?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up pretty well, Tom. I've got my HF rig, and of course got a power supply underneath it, and a manual tuner, and then the 2 meter here, I've got a power supply and the radio itself. And underneath it, not hooked up right now, is the good old Drake.
Okay, roger that. Well, good deal there. And I know you've got a good deal there. I wish mine was as simple as yours as far as disconnecting the antenna. I think you can reach yours from the ground. I need to get up on a ladder. I definitely have to address it. So I think you're actually set up there pretty good. But typically what we want to do, if we're all out there looking at protecting our little ham shacks or our big ham shacks or anything in between, you have to look at every piece of equipment and every type of line that could be coming in there. And the reason why is this EMP, this great electromagnetic pulse. It's the energy, the radio energy emitted by the lightning strike. Should it be not even directly on your place or your antenna there, it could be a block or two away. And in this case, this pulse itself could travel through the power lines, could travel through cable lines, telephone lines, any of those, and all of those, and in this case. So every one of those, they make special protectors for all of these. Let me reset. I think last week we talked about polyphasers. Brand name is basically made for coax. There are gas discharge tubes that can be set up for twin leads. Couple things here, and we have to look at this. A lot of these devices will, say, eliminate 90% or maybe 95% of this pulse. The problem is that other 5 or 10% can be thousands, maybe even 10,000s of volts. So there's a couple of things we're going to discuss tonight. One is a single point ground. Another thing that's very important. Let me reset. Is we're all familiar with grounding, and just before we get too far into that, I'd like to get a little bit of input here from George. I mean, George has grounded equipment. George basically... it is what it is, right? KI6CIA, if you're out there, if you got good soil for grounding, you do, and if you don't, you don't. There's not much you can do other than I heard you could kind of put salt water in around the ground rods. George, are you out there, and can you come back on that? I don't hear him out there. Anyway, I know that you can change the conductivity of your soil somewhat. If you're up here in the mountains in your certain areas, like at Sugar Loaf here, it's about 99% rock, and then there's dust in between. So anyway, we can do the best we can do to get a ground rod in. However, multiple ground rods are better. And here again, a lot of these things are going to cost money. I would say everybody out there, just do the best you can do to approach that. No, you don't have to spend the money for every one of these items. I think the best, first off, is to disconnect your antenna away from the house. Hopefully your antenna is 50 feet away from your house. If not, it is what it is. So we're all limited by our real estate and what we have. But there's like goals that we'd like to try to, approach, but you can only deal with what you have there. Let me reset.
K6TUX.
TUX. Gee, how are you out? How are you doing out there? And speaking of somebody out there in the desert, 29 Palms, I bet you get a lot of thunderstorms out there this time of year. Is that correct?
Nope, nothing at all. We have nothing. I wish we have something like a drop of water going down. But the cloud come by, they said hello and goodbye. And they go all your way, or they go towards the river or toward Las Vegas. But we did not have no thunderstorm, and I did not leave the country since the last time I talked to you, and somebody was supposed to pick up some antenna. I give and also help me to put my cap up. I think everybody went kapunk. They must have went to sleep and forgot. Anyway, we did not have no thunderstorm, nothing at all. So I think the person who told you they had thunderstorm, I don't know where it was, maybe in Yucca Valley, but in 29 Palm, nothing. Sorry, boss.
Well, Gee, I'll tell you what, we didn't forget about you. We just haven't had a chance to get out there yet. So we'll make it out there, don't worry. That's okay. If you have any thunderstorms or lightning strikes out there, I know it's not good to have the dryness, but it's good to not have the thunder and the lightning out there right now. So, all right, and good to have you out there. I think that one thing that we primarily what we need to do, as always, is try to approach these grounds and grounding rods. One is great. A multiple grid of those is better. Especially if you have a tower. If you don't have that, use what you can. If you have an equipment ground of the house, that's better than nothing at all. But when you get into your shack, and you're going to have some of these lightning protection devices, it is recommended in this article to have what they call a single grounding plate. Let me get the definition they have here. Anyway, essentially what it is, single point ground plate, where this is a plate, or could it be a piece of sheet metal or whatever that you attach your ground to. And you don't want to have multiples of these. But what will happen is that the lightning could possibly, or even a pulse, could want to arc between this to another one. So it's recommended to have one and one and only inside, and then work on getting that connected to the outside world there. Mike, real quick, WB6CLZ, are you back yet? KF6Q.
Down in the operating position, Tom. We're back. Go ahead.
Okay, good deal. And with this single ground plate, the copper is great, steel is better than nothing. And then we get into what to run that to your grounding rod or whatever you have outside. Number 6 wire is recommended. If you don't have that, though, use something. It's better than nothing at all. 14 and 12 will work. Number 6 is the best. And anything that's better than that, actually a strap instead of wire is even better yet. Mike, they're saying here something that has the cross-sectional area of number 6, but because it's a strap, it'll have less inductance than just the wire itself. Did you pick up on any of that last week? KF6Q here. Everybody, please stand by. KF6Q.
Yeah, I had that at S5 over here in Riverside.
Yeah, K6YNW. I could hear it here and then it went down, so mobile probably. K6YNW.
Okay, roger that. Didn't hear anything on the input whatsoever with either antenna or radio up here, so did not pick it up here. All right, anyway. Probably continue on here. Mike, WB6CLZ, are you still out there?
Certainly. Yeah, a ground strap is the best way to go, kind of like the old-fashioned straps on batteries. And yes, at least a number six, but bigger is always better, and that's a better path to ground than a you know, than a round type wire.
Yeah, and a couple little notes here. We were talking last week about having, if you have a tower and you're going to ground that tower, you know, if you have multiple radials coming out, what you want to do is basically any grounding attachment. Let's say we have a tower, we're going to have six or eight ground rods out there. First off, you want them quite a ways away from the tower. If they're 8-foot rods, they need to be about 16 feet apart. Double the distance of the rod, the depth of the rod. Another item on that, as we've all heard mentioned, or if you haven't, we'll mention it now, taking an, where we attach a wire to the tower and bringing it down to the rod, a very gradual radius. There is a reason. And the reason is this. As we all know, lightning doesn't want to make a quick turn. Let me reset. There's actually an electronics background on that. A really quick 90 is 1/4 of a turn, like you're winding a coil. There's enough inductance in that quarter turn to basically offer resistance to that immediate pulse or set of pulses. So it'll see that and want to then arc to something. So when it starts arcing, we have no control. What we're trying to do here is once it, say, hit the tower or something up above, we want it to go where we, you know, we're going to try to direct it where we want it to go, and we can do that to some degree. And like I say, this is all, you know, it's not rocket science, but it can involve quite a bit of equipment and pieces and parts. So if you, like I say, any information on that, please email me at kf6q@arrl.net. I'll give you this link on this article, and it has a lot of stuff here. Anyway, Mike, anything else to add on the grounding?
More time, Tom. I didn't catch that.
All right. One, two, three. Everybody out there, wake up. Okay. I'm putting them all asleep, Mike. No, I know. You're paying attention to your work here. Appreciate that. No, is there anything else out there to add on grounding? Then we have the ground rods, and we have radials. If you have radials out there, I guess this would be a way to look at it. The best possible condition, if you have enough money and equipment to do this, if you have a tower, bring your very, very gradually radiused wires off the tower. In this case, we're going to say 8 of those, or 6, or how many you ever you're going to have out there. And then get them underground by 6 to 18 inches, traveling in the dirt underground, about 16 feet, and at that point, with a good connection to that ground rod, any way you can attach it so you never have to worry about service on that puppy, and don't worry about checking it each year, even though it's not a bad idea. Mike, anything to add to that?
About that, Tom, I just, the signal went down for a second.
Very tight. The tighter, the better on connections. Possibly even coat the connection with something to keep it, Nolox or something to keep it from corroding. And bigger is better naturally on wire and on grounding. That's about it. I mean, bigger is better. That's all I can keep saying. But you hit the nail right on the head. To say, but in this article on probably the third issue there, and they do show a lattice of steel rebar in the concrete, and I know this is not a good thing. I don't know why they would show this. Structural wise, a lot of heat in concrete will make it explode. Your concrete base exploding for your tower, very, very bad. The tower is not going to have anything to hold it up anymore. Or it will definitely weaken it, and next big windstorm, who knows what's going to happen. Anyway, real quick on that, anybody else out there with anything to add or any questions, please come back to KF6Q.
SES, KI6IQA.
Kelly, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to play devil's advocate for a second and pick yours and my brain about my antenna. The top of my antenna from ground zero to the tip of the antenna is about, I'm going to guess, 50-ish feet. And right next door, about 35 feet away, maybe 45 feet away, is a 110-foot tall pine tree. So if lightning is looking for certain ground, would I be a fool to think that it's going to hit that tree before it hits my antenna? And would it then at that point make sense not to ground the antenna? Because if the antenna is grounded, the lightning might want to hit the antenna and go ahead and use that big tree next door as a lightning rod. Catch me up.
Well, I would say with a tree that tall, especially if it's a live tree, and I think you're referring to a live tree, the moisture content is extremely high. They are excellent ground rods, lightning rods, and most likely, and I say that with reservation, it's in the disclosure or legal clause there, it would probably hit the tree. However, it would still be a good idea to ground your system because of two reasons here. Number one, there's no guarantees that the lightning will hit that tree. And if it does, you're not going to actually make yourself that much more of a viable target, but you will protect yourself. And also, if the lightning does hit that tree, that much current flowing that close by is going to induce a current into your antenna, like it or not. And that also will be a huge potential, and so that's the secondary thing that we want to protect against. So I would say it would not be a good idea to eliminate grounding because of those two reasons right there. I don't think you're going to make yourself a bigger target there, but that would be probably the best call. Proceed with the grounding, and you'd be probably, I'd say, 98% better off doing that. I'll throw it over to Mike real quick. Mike, anything else to add? KF6Q.
I don't know. I don't think I would rely on a tree for my ground protection. Like you say, it is a good ground, but I still would have other means. You know, I would have backups and like that. But, I think a tree would give you some sort of an umbrella, but I wouldn't trust it for I wouldn't trust my roots for it.
Comment.
Yes, go ahead, comment.
The tree sounds like a good idea, but you're still going to have a residual charge from the tree to whatever else it can ground to. You're better off grounding to the tree or to the antenna and making sure that's very well grounded. Make sure the tree is separated. KJ6FYL.
Okay, Mike, appreciate that. And anybody else out there with any comments on that? That's like three of us kind of headed in that direction, just keeping score here, Kelly. Anybody else with any more comments on that for Kelly?
KEAR.
W.
Okay, might have three people in there, but let's take the first gentleman. Was it YNR?
K-H-E-A-R.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just a comment on that. Coming from the eastern part of the country up there in Ohio area, the ground rods, lightning rods, if you would, the big thing with that and the importance of grounding that tower is probably more than just getting rid of the lightning when it hits the tower, is to prevent the lightning from hitting the tower. Grounding the tower is actually, you're reducing the charge on the tower and actually making it less of a target for the lightning. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, just to add to that, what that essentially does is make a clear path to ground without any actual charge developing on the tower itself, as if it would if it hit something and then had to look for ground from there. And then I know we had YNW. Go ahead, Chris.
Yep. The unreliability of prediction where lightning is going to strike, it's definitely good to have protection wherever you can get it. It's like throwing dice at best. K6YNW.
Roger that. And where the dice land is, probability of where the lightning is going to hit. Any other questions on that, Kelly, or did we come close on that? All right, KI6IQA, how is that? Any other questions there from you?
Clear as mud now. From a different polarity, step back and think about two points of equal altitude up in the sky, elevated off of the Earth. let's call it two points of equal altitude. One is grounded, one is not. Which one would the lightning most like to hit? I've always thought that lightning wants to seek the most direct route to ground. So that's why I brought it up. But thank you everybody for the comments it's my equation. KI6IQA.
Okay, Kelly. Yeah, and actually, at equal heights, it would probably definitely go to the grounded one. Which actually, in this case, this might be what you want. I think this is what everybody is trying to say, that you want it to you want to make it go to ground through the route that you pick, as against just picking a tree, which would probably light up like a Roman candle. But we'll let you go at that, and hopefully that helps you out. Anybody else out there with any other questions or topics or suggestions out there, please come back.
86PL.
Yeah, go ahead, Harold, 86PL.
Yeah, he'd be better off hitting this tower and going in the ground than he would hitting that tree, because that tree could part of it end up going through his roof and burning his house down. And on the reinforcing rebar in the base of your tower, unless you run your ground rod straight down in through the concrete, that rebar is required for the strength to hold that tower up. And most cities, Riverside's really lenient, but most cities, they send an engineer out and you have the engineering plans from the manufacturer, and they make sure that you follow that, and all of those I've seen show the rebar in the concrete base. So unless the lightning goes directly down through that concrete, why, that's not going to have any effect, I don't think. 86PL.
In case it matters, let me say that I don't have a tower. This is this antenna is bolted onto the side of a wood structure. KI6IQA.
KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday. Yeah, this is true. You don't have a tower there. You do have metal in the air. From that antenna, you have coax. So as far as what the lightning sees is metal. Doesn't care. It sees metal up there and metal in the coax and stuff like that. So what I think would be in your case, Kelly, is where, and I know that I'm not any better at this point myself. Mine comes right into my house. But we need to look at this for safety of having a way to actually disconnect it, even if it meant getting more coax to come down to a possible grounding point. This point would be the same as a grounding point you would use for a tower. And what this will do is allow that energy to go straight into the ground instead of actually following the coax into the house, which would be pretty much devastating. So basically, same information applies, not necessarily with a tower, but with an antenna up like that. So anyway, and let me reset here real quick. Well, note about anybody out there who's poured concrete and with rebar. The rebar generally is, or better be, isolated away from the dirt. The concrete will surround it completely. Therefore, the rebar is not in contact with the dirt for corrosion reasons. And here again, really, other than just being a chunk of steel, there is not going to make a good ground. The grounding rods that are out there a little bit further, whether you have a tower or you just have a grounding rod, just to have a point to get it out there away from the house. Like an electrical panel service, generally the ground rod is right next to the panel. If you can add another rod for your antenna, best thing to do is get it out there. I know it's going to look pretty ugly. Get it out there about 10, 15 feet away from the house and have that some kind of ground going out to that. And as we've said, all this is optional. Obviously, we want to get as close as we can to this. Sometimes we can't even do any part of this. So just do the best you can to approach that. Any other questions? Please come back, KF6Q.
Data.
A comment, YNW.
Okay, Chris, I don't know if there was somebody before you, but if there was, let's let Chris go first real quick.
Okay, I was hiking alone, and I camped on a ridge. Yeah, about 6,000 feet, so some of the peaks were higher. Anyway, it got cloudy. And I didn't even worry about lightning. I just said that's no place to be, and I got out of there. K6YNW.
Ah, very good point. If you're out hiking, definitely. And what does they say? I don't care how hard it rains, don't stand underneath the tree. was there somebody else in there? Please come back.
W6.
This is WB6 CLVIT.
Lightning does not like to turn corners. Over.
Okay, we had a double there. CLZ, hang on. Yes, please go ahead with lightning turning corners.
Yeah, this is W6GZI. That's it. I heard it doesn't like to turn corners. Over.
Yeah, roger that. Essentially, and the reason being is that if you have an inductor and you have a sharp corner, that inductance alone, it just makes a block. It's like a speed bump. And it says, no, I'm not going that way. It'll want to go away from that speed bump. So a sharp turn, it will not follow that turn. That's the speed bump. It'll go straight. Essentially, simple answer is, it doesn't want to turn. Very good point there. Appreciate that, Frank. Back to you, Mike, WB6CLZ.
I've got to bow out of here. I've got work to do, so I'm going to say 7-3 to the net, and we will try to give a little more attention next week. I just got to make some money. So WB6CLZ will be clear, and 7-3 to all on the net.
Okay, Mike, appreciate your input there, and it's great to have you on the net every week. Anybody else out there, any comments or questions? We're getting close to 8 o'clock to, before we close this net down.
Comment?
Yes, go ahead, Harold.
If you ever are fortunate enough in the fall or the spring when when the storms are moving through Utah, southern Utah, and you happen to be near Zion Park, near St. George, there's a little town right outside of Zion called Hurricane. It's down in a real steep canyon with solid rock walls running straight up for close to 1,000 foot, I think. And I haven't been fortunate enough to be in there. I missed it by 24 hours the last time I was over there. But it rains so hard, and the lightning is hitting on those crags above the town. And when it hits, balls, big, huge, not little bitty ones, big, huge balls of fire run along the edge of the cliff, bounce over the top of the big boulders that are along the top of the cliff. Just a big light show up there with all this electricity running around in circles and a heavy torrential rain, 86 feel. Let you know what can happen with this stuff.
I bet that's pretty awesome to see. And then the second thought would be maybe I don't want to be there to see that. You know, that sounds like it's not probably the safest place, but pretty awesome and a lot of power, demonstration of natural power there. Appreciate that, Harold. Anybody else out there with anything to share this evening before we close the net?
KJ6KDL.
SKN.
CJ.
KJ6OX.
Okay, hopefully I can remember all that. We'll start out with Jim, and then Chris, then Guy, and then didn't catch the full of the last call sign there. Let's go to Jim, KJ6KDL first. Go ahead.
I had a few interruptions there, so if you've already talked about this, tell me to go listen to my recording that's recording for me. Did you mention anything about tying those ground rods to a central point ground and then tying all your gear to that one point so lightning has one point of travel?
Right. I think they list that as the single ground plane or plate or whatever, single point grounding. Did cover that earlier. And yes, that's primarily inside your residence or shack or whatever. And that's to basically, should anything come in, and we hope not, that little small percentage, what it will do is that that point also is grounded. So if it comes in from another source, telephone, cable, coax, whatever, it'll go right back out through that plate to the primary ground. So just a little repeat there for you, Jim, not a problem. So KI6SKN, go ahead.
Yeah, I just thought I'd share a lightning strike that happened to a neighbor just two doors down from me. This is probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. Hit the tree about 25 foot from his house and did pretty typically what happens with tree strikes is it just came ripping down and tore out a good strip of bark from the top down to about the bottom. And again, like I said, it's about 25 feet from his house. And it got into his house electrical, and I forget now, he lost a few appliances. And again, he was about 25 feet or better away from the plates that got hit. Just thought I'd share that.
KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, 1900 hours, conditions permitting. You know, Chris, and that's actually a good example, glad you could share that, of that electromagnetic pulse, the energy pulse that it emits. And that energy pulse itself, not the lightning strike, you know, but the RF energy, if you want to call it, that induced into electronic equipment, it's really, I'm going to have to say, to protect everything in your house, it can be done, but it's not easy. It is complicated. And the stuff that's not protected, of course, a good example there, like you said, it took out a lot of it. Anything electronics, anything that actually has wire in it. So appreciate sharing that. Guy, AJ... He's a check in very often. I forgot his call. Okay. ZJ. I'll just say ZJ. Go ahead, guy.
That's the reason I'm checking in is because I've been so bad about checking in lately there, Tom. Sorry. Alpha Foxtrot 6, Zulu Juliet. And that's really about the only reason that I chimed in there, just to say, hey, I'm here, listening. Go ahead and put me on the roll for today. That's about it. I don't have any of those cool stories to share. Actually, I'm kind of glad I don't, that I haven't had any up-close and personal experiences like that. So let me pass it on down the line. We'll talk to you later, Tom.
Okay, guy. Yeah, AF6DJ, very sorry about the call. Yeah, well, when you get that tower in the air, hopefully you still won't have anything to share, but there's a couple things to think about that we've talked about. You know, as when you get that up there, a couple more things to do, right? And we had one last gentleman in there. If you're still out there, please come back to KF6Q.
I'm KJ6OIX. I just dropped in here 12 minutes ago on Tech Tip Tuesday. The question may be redundant, but in regards to a mobile antenna system, any chances of grounding a mobile antenna system when it's mobile?
You know, I gotta, and I'm gonna shoot from the hip on this one. I don't think there's much you're gonna be able to do. if you're out in the desert, and glad you could check in this evening there from Lucerne Valley. As you're crossing the desert, you are a primary target. You're out there. Not much else you can do. I would say, if anything, if there is a lot of lightning, just turn the radio off. I don't know what else to do. All I know is I've been in that position. It's a very scary position to be in, but there's not much else you can do if you're moving.
See the movie Time Bandits?
Missed that one. I didn't think there was a heck of a lot, you know, a person could do. I remember back in the 50s, early 60s, fuel tankers, fuel trailers, they were still, you know, running rubber ground straps hanging off the axles of those things, where they would, you know, catch and touch ground to discharge, you know, static discharges or static, you know, charge buildup from the rubber tires. But just what I didn't learn. Comment.
Hey, Roger that. Yeah, I think static buildup would be one thing. A lightning hit would be way too much for that to handle. But anyway, go ahead, Harold. Go ahead, comment.
Yeah, I don't think you'd do anything for lightning, but if you want to get rid of the static that builds up, Napa, I believe, still carries the, they're not rubber, they're carbon. They're rubber filled with high content carbon. And all the tankers that I ran back then, we ran with a piece of log chain wrapped around the rear tanker axle and let that drag on the pavement just to get rid of static. But, because if you didn't, well, you might open a valve and set the whole town on fire. But that was all that stuff before, it was just static electricity, and those straps are still available if you want to use them for that. And J.C. Whitney may have them too, 86 feet.
Okay, roger that. You know, in a lot of the new receivers, you know, a lot of microelectronics extremely sensitive to just about everything, so... yeah, I'm not really sure. Didn't really read anything about that, and I guess that the kind of shot in the dark there, what to do with that on a mobile. So, Time Bandits, saw that a long time ago. Good movie. Anybody else out there? Any questions or comments? Please come back. All right. Well. We'll hang around a little bit after that. Do appreciate everybody out there tonight. We'll always love all the comments. And if we can help anybody out there, yeah, Kelly, if you're still out there listening, It's your call. A couple good comments there of what has happened with tree strikes nearby and stuff like that. So anyway, good luck with that. All right, QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday Net. Closing the net at 2,000 hours and 5 minutes. And we'll return the repeater to normal use. I truly thank everybody out there for participating. If you've listened in and if we have helped you in any way, shape, or form, that is fantastic. Please join us again next week. Anybody with any questions that we didn't answer, feel free to email me at kf6q@arrl.net. Send me an email, and we'll answer all your questions there. So everybody else, take care. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Same time, same station, same place. KF6Q, and we'll be clear.